Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the latest episode of the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast. I am Matt Burnham, joined, as always, by Gilberto Manzano. We weren't here last week because of the holiday. Everybody was scattering, running around, and then trying to sleep off the turkey. We're back. The good news is you didn't miss a whole heck of a lot if you didn't watch a ton of football on Thanksgiving because all three games were blowouts. And the Black Friday game, the only thing you missed was one of the more hilarious pick sixes in NFL history. Only the Jets could throw a Hail Mary and then watch it get returned for a touchdown. I've never seen that happen. I don't know that I ever will see it happen again. But Tim Boyle and the Jets were happy to give us a little laugh before the holiday season went into full swing. But there were plenty of interesting games on Sunday, which we, of course, are going to get to. We're not going to talk about the Monday night game, which really put football back about 50 years. Our editor is a Vikings fan, and I'm pretty surprised he's not in a mental hospital after that game. Nobody would blame him if he was. But with that being said, Gilberto, let's get you in here, man. How you doing? How was your Thanksgiving?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing well. And shout out to you, Matt, for holding it down on Thanksgiving and the Black Friday game. And, you know, at one point I told myself, I should just, you know, chill all day. Why am I turning on TV on Friday? Who wants to watch the Dolphins beat down the Jets? And then I saw the Hail Mary on the pick six there. And you know what? That was worth it to see the Jets struggle. And Matt, you know, it's been a minute for us to doing this podcast. And it kind of tells you that the season is very long, the regular season. When you see the Colts in the playoffs, when you see the Broncos making a move, when you see the Rams and the Packers, you know, a game or a half a game behind the Seahawks. So, you know, I know we haven't been here in 2 weeks. And, you know, sometimes these games are snoozers. But this playoff picture is very interesting right now.
It is. And, you know, personally, this is my favorite time of the year. Well, in the regular season. I mean, the playoffs are the playoffs. But in terms of the regular season, because, you know, by this time, yes, teams like the Panthers, who, by the way, we're going to get to the Panthers here. Obviously, some news coming out of Carolina this week. But like the Panthers, the Cardinals, the fighting Tommy DeVitos, the Patriots. Okay, like, they're still playing games. But I don't have to necessarily, I don't want to say I don't care about those teams. I mean, we cover the whole league, but I'm not paying as much attention to those teams because their season essentially at this point is over and it's about draft positioning. And you're kind of paying attention to them in terms of maybe young talent and which guys are ascending and stuff like that. But this time of year, you can really hone in on 4 or 5 games a week where those are the games that are really important. And of course, there's a massive one this week in the NFC with the Eagles and Niners, which we'll get to here in a few minutes. But I like that part of it. I'm a huge nerd when it comes to the playoff picture and the playoff machine over at ESPN and New York Times has its like percentages of what, you know, what teams' odds are. And then you have I'll look at the schedules and analyze the schedules. Like I love doing that. This time of year for me is a lot of fun. Like one of the games, it's gonna be one of the 5 lines we talk about, but Houston and Denver. It's a huge game. Like whoever loses that game, that's a really big loss, right? But on the flip side of that, if you win that game, it's a big tiebreaker. And now all of a sudden you go, man, like after that, I got like 5 games left. And that's it. You know, it's funny how in reality, you know, most teams still have what, 6 to play. You know, and you look at it and go, well, that's more than a third of the season. But it doesn't feel like that. It feels like you're really coming up, you know, to the end of the season. So it's exciting, man. And you're going to have really good races in both conferences, you know, for the wild card spot. I feel like the divisions largely, you feel like you know who's going to win those. But the wild card spots are up for grabs, both in the AFC and the NFC.
Yeah, well, besides the NFC South, but who cares, right? Just get a team. I don't even care if it's the Panthers. Put them in there and just get blown out in the first round by the Cowboys or whoever, and we're fine. But yeah, divisions are pretty, you know, maybe I'm trying to think of one. Maybe the AFC South. I know the Jaguars put it away kind of last week. And
Pittsburgh somehow is like, but you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised if they found a way to win that division. So you're right. The NFC South, I don't even consider that a division. Like those are just 4 teams that somehow ended up together. That division is awful. I feel like that division is just like, hey, who's going to lose to Dallas in the first round? And then that, you know, which by the way, is what it was last year. It's the same thing. Tampa and Carolina, and to some degree the Saints, fought to the death last year just for the right for Dallas to miss like 9 extra points in the wild card round and still win by 30. And I think that's where we're headed again this year, maybe without the missing of the extra points. All right, speaking of teams in the wild card race, which frankly, at the beginning of the year, maybe wasn't expected, the Buffalo Bills, who, look, there are losses that I think happen during the course of the year, even for good teams, and you go, okay, you know what? It happens, right? It happens. It's a bad game. I'm thinking about like Baltimore at Pittsburgh, where they had a couple turnovers, they dropped a bunch of passes, or Kansas City at Denver, where they had a bunch of turnovers. And if you're looking out from the outside in, you just go, hey, look, that's just one of those games. It's a divisional game and it happens. That Bills-Eagles game, while losing to the Eagles, especially in Philly, is certainly no shame there. That's a game, if you're Buffalo, that you had to be physically sick walking out of that building. I mean, you won the turnover battle. You won the time of possession battle by a huge margin. You had over 500 yards of offense. Josh Allen was spectacular. I know he had one pick, although that was really more a great play by Bradbury than it was on Allen. You had a lead in the dying seconds of regulation, and Philadelphia hits a 59-yard field goal in a monsoon to tie the game. Then in overtime, you get the ball, and I'm not blaming either guy, but Allen and Davis miscommunicate, don't know who it's on. It's a walk-in touchdown. I mean, it is a walk-in touchdown on third down there. They miscommunicate. They don't hit it. Baskets the field goal. But then the Eagles come down and score, frankly, on one of the easier drives you're ever going to see. I mean, the Bills offered no resistance. Hurts walks in on a quarterback draw to win it. And so now the Bills are sitting at 6-6. And I guess, look, my question here is pretty simple. Are the Bills finished at 6-6 as they go into their bye?
You know, it is a tough question, but I'm going to say yes. And I know the tough schedule is part of it. When they come out of the bye week, I think they play the Cowboys, the Dolphins, they play the Chiefs too. But watching that game, Matt, I felt a couple of emotions. I'm like, I was a little disappointed. I'm like, man, that potential for the Bills was just shown on TV in a great game, going toe-to-toe against the Eagles. It feels like a Super Bowl preview. But then it's like, oh, wait, they're 6-6, and they're like 10th in the AFC right now. So it feels a little silly to say that. And I'm like, man, I wish I could find a way in. They're going to be dangerous. And then I analyzed that game, the way you just broke it down right now. Miscommunication on the choice route with Gabe Davis. Interception with Josh Allen. 20 seconds ago after the Jake Elliott field goal, and you sit on the ball. The coin flip goes your way, and you still can't score a touchdown. It was all set up for you, Buffalo. And it just kind of was a summary of their season. A thin defense, inconsistent offense, bad coaching decisions. So it's kind of like, yeah, these are the Buffalo Bills. They're going to fall short, and that's why I'm going to say they won't make the playoffs.
I'm with you. I think they're finished. Like, that game is you put it, really. I agree wholeheartedly. It was just a microcosm of everything that's wrong with them this year. You know, I've seen so many people in our line of work over the last, whatever it is, 4 days, 3 days, who have talked about, the Eagles, yeah, they're 10-1, but they're fortunate to have beaten Kansas City and Buffalo and Dallas because of all the mistakes these teams made. It's like, I got to tell you, that's kind of the point. The Eagles don't make those mistakes. The Bills made mistakes, and it allowed the Eagles to win. The Chiefs dropped a million passes and had 2 turnovers. And guess what? That's been the problem for the Chiefs all year long. They drop passes, and they turn the ball over. And Dallas, that's who Dallas is, going 25 yards backwards in a key spot, right? Like, that's who they are. Now, you can sit there and say, hey, look, the Eagles are vulnerable this year. And I wouldn't argue with you. I think they are vulnerable. They could lose to some of these teams if those teams could put it together. But those teams are not putting it together consistently. And so kudos to Philly. As far as Buffalo goes, I just don't know. And I've always been a fan of McDermott. I think he's a good coach. But I also think you're to the point where McDermott is hitting a ceiling with this team. And I think he's the ceiling. Like, you mentioned it, Gilberto, and that's where I was going to go with this next. You have Josh Allen, who's playing out of his mind. You have 20 seconds left. You initially had 2 timeouts, and you blew one of those timeouts to freeze the kicker for reasons I'll never understand. He hits the field goal anyway. You still have 20 seconds and a timeout. And if any team in the world ought to know that 20 seconds is enough, it's the Bills. Okay, they were on the other side of 13 seconds a couple of years ago. You would think Buffalo would have gone, yeah, okay, listen, we got time here. Hell, even if you don't end up making it, okay, maybe you get yourselves an opportunity at a 60-yard field goal. Maybe you don't hit it, but at least you have a shot. You try. For them to kneel on the ball there, I was stunned watching that game when they knelt down. And then as the game goes on, you're in this soft zone coverage in overtime. Guys, you can't let them score. Like, either the game is going to end in a tie, or you're going to flat out lose. The only time they weren't in soft zone on that last drive was the final play of the game, where they brought an all-out blitz in a spot that, you know, if Hurts sees it, he's just going to take off running. And he took off running, and I'm not one to really bag on a guy's effort. On that last play, Rasul Douglas, if you haven't seen that play, that is one of the worst tackling efforts in the history of the sport. He sees Hurts at the 5-yard line, and he disengages and just stands there. He just let him walk in the end zone. Now, look, I understand Hurts is a tough guy to tackle. Maybe he doesn't make the play anyway. Could you try to make the play? Could you even make throw your body in front of him, do anything? Like, nobody's going to fault you if you can't bring the guy down in time. Fair enough. But, like, could you try to tackle him? I just look at the Bills and say, all right, you got to buy. You already laid out their schedule. Their next game is at Arrowhead. The Bills have 5 conference losses. They can't lose another game. But this is it. They're going to have to run the table. And I got to tell you, I don't think they're coming out of Arrowhead with a win. I don't think they're winning that game. So this is one of those years you look at the Bills and go, how did that team not make the playoffs? And in a year where Burrow is out, Herbert's not making the playoffs. I mean, this was a year that you basically look at if you're Buffalo and go, man, if we're right, like, who's the, I mean, okay, it's Kansas City. And who? You played Miami great every time. You would think you could have a shot against Jacksonville. I know Jacksonville beat him earlier in the year, but you think they have a good shot there. Baltimore's a good team, but Buffalo could certainly beat him. Like, this is a year really lined up for you, and you may not even make the playoffs. I mean, that's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I want to add to that is, like, you know, people talk about the 13 seconds against the Chiefs and the Bills should know better, but I'm like, look at maybe your last couple of games where Russell Wilson just, you know, threw a prayer down the field and got a DPI to set up a game-winning field goal as time expired. Like, why don't you just try that? You know, just throw it down there. And I really want to go into Sean McDermott's mind. I know he got asked questions about it, but I'm like, was that pick six Hail Mary on his mind from Black Friday? We're like, yeah, you know what? I'd rather go for the overtime instead of throwing a Hail Mary here and then you running back and we lose a game. I'm like, you know, it's the Jets. I have more faith in your team. I don't think that was a process, but I'm like, what's going on in his mind where you have Josh Allen, who might have the strongest arm in the NFL, just throw it up. It's okay. I think have some little faith in your players, but he's seen a lot of, blown assignments and miscommunication. Maybe he got scared. And I know people are talking about firings this time of year, Matt, but, you know, I don't know. It might be time for, like you mentioned, with Sean McDermott, he maxed his ceiling. He touched it. He ready to go on. You did what you could. It hasn't worked out. So that might be one of these jobs where, like, you did not maybe expect to be open. And it could be, kind of throw a little wrench there for all the coaching candidates.
Yeah, no, it's well said. And I think, before we move on to the Eagles and Niners, which are going to preview that game, because you could make an argument it's the best game of the year. Little news, as we're doing this, as we're recording this podcast on Wednesday, well, I guess for you it's morning, for me it's early afternoon. Aaron Rodgers, the 21-day window has opened for Aaron Rodgers as the Jets are giving him an opportunity to return to practice. And I don't know how you feel. I'll try to be succinct with this. What? Like, what? You're 4-7, and your offensive line looks like me, Gilberto, and 3 guys off the street. And you're thinking it's a good idea to put this guy back out there right now. Like, my personal opinion of this, I think this is an, hey, look at me. I might be able to practice. Look at me. Make sure I'm in the newspaper. Make sure I'm in the headlines. I think Aaron Rodgers, I don't think it's unfair to say, despite what he says, he likes the headlines and he likes a little bit of attention. And I think this is what this is about. If the Jets actually put him in a game, everybody should be fired. Everybody. I don't care if he's healthy. Like, I really, even if he has a miraculous recovery and all that, which I don't think, frankly, is possible. But if he does, what are you going to do? You're going to put him in there when they're 5-10? I mean, what is the point of this? So I don't get it. I think the Jets are just trying to placate him at this point. But I also think it's insane that there's any idea that he might come back this season.
Yeah, you know, I had a couple of mixed feelings about this. Like a couple of weeks ago, I'm like, you know what? It's been such a miserable season for the Jets. Aaron Rodgers, play a game or two, get some kind of chemistry going, get some momentum for next year. It's been such a terrible year. Maybe you need something good like that. And then the more that I watch this team and I see Tim Boyle struggle, Zach Wilson, Nathaniel Hackett, Randall Cobb can't play, Alan Lazar is not even doing anything. He's getting in trouble with the team already. It's like these are all the choices from Aaron Rodgers. So if Aaron Rodgers plays and he does well and you win a couple of meaningless games, it's kind of like it's an assurance for the franchise, Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh. See, we got the right guy. It just didn't work out. And everything he's saying is telling us it's true. It's okay. Let's keep listening to the guy. And it's like, stop giving Aaron Rodgers everything that he wants. I get it. He came to your franchise to try to help you. But you tried it his way, and it didn't work out, unfortunately, because he's not available. But you got to have some backup options. You got to, you know, have a roster that could, you know, implement just in case a 40-year-old quarterback gets hurt again next year. We should have a different backup who's more competent. Stop getting your boys Aaron Rodgers, or get a wide receiver or an OC who could work on the fly and just kind of call it a nice game to help out your backup. Nothing has worked out with Aaron Rodgers' choices. So I'm like, if he plays and he does well, it's more like, see, we did everything right. It just didn't work out. So let's keep doing everything we're doing right now with the healthy Rodgers. It's like, no, you don't need that. Have a couple plan B, plan C, and try to figure out, because you got to expect the worst when it comes to this franchise.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Can you imagine what this is going to be like if he comes back and blows his Achilles out again? Then what? Then when's he coming back? Like, if the Jets trot Aaron Rodgers out on the field, I don't care what he says. I don't care if he says behind the scenes saying, look, I want to be out there, and if I'm not out there, it's going to be a problem. Fine, then it's a problem. I'm not playing you. This is crazy. This is insane. It's like if Joe Burrow, like, let's, and I honestly, I know he just had surgery. I'm not sure exactly what the timeline is. But let's say his timeline was 4 months to recover. And Joe Burrow was like, listen, I know we're hopelessly out of the playoff race and it's week 17. And my wrist is basically has like spaghetti tendons at the moment. But you know what I love to do? I like to go out and play against Kansas City on New Year's Eve because it's a rivalry. And I'm feeling like I ought to be out there. Like, there's no world where Zach Taylor's like, yeah, listen, Joe, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do that. Like, at some point, you just have to shut him down. I could understand this to some extent. If they were in the playoff race or something, okay, you're still taking a huge chance, but I get it. You're 4-7 and can't block anybody. You know? I mean, hell, you mentioned Alan Lazard. They signed him to a 4-year deal. And Saleh, in the presser the other day, is talking about how, yeah, you know, we've got Alan for another year and a half. He's already thinking about cutting him after 2 years. It's just, look, that team has been a wreck my entire life. Well before I was born, okay? The idea that that there's any merit in playing Aaron Rodgers right now is just nuts. Let's go to a team that wears green that actually has a clue, the Eagles, who are 10-1. They're hosting the 49ers. They have won games against Dallas, Kansas City, and the Bills the last 3 weeks, all of which very entertaining games. Now they take on the Niners. We'll get to the line in a little bit here because we're going to talk about it one more time here at the end. The Niners are favored in this game, and yet it's in Philadelphia. If the Eagles win this game, they're essentially the one seed. I don't know that there's any way that they're not. They'd be 3 up with a breaker on the Niners. They're 2 up on the Lions right now already. And the Eagles, their schedule after this stretch is not that hard. They play Dallas again, but after they got the Giants twice, and they have Arizona, like they're going to win these games. What are you looking for in this game more than anything else?
You know, just kind of the intensity level increasing. And, you know, I keep trying to find a game where the Eagles are going to be like, okay, you know, all right, that game against the Bills feels like a trap game. You had so much emotion in that Arrowhead, you know, game against the Chiefs. You came back, you won. It was a Monday, short week. You're kind of due for a trap against the Bills. It almost came to fruition, but they went to overtime. And that's what they do, man. They find a way to win. And like you were mentioning, people are saying, well, they haven't played their best. And I'm like, I bet the opponents of the Eagles are thinking, yeah, that means there's room for improvement. They're 10-1. They could get better. That's a scary sight for the rest of the NFL. So, you know, I keep trying to find a way. Okay, there's got to be a letdown game for this team. Like, you know, Hurts could be sometimes up and down. The secondary is terrible, but not this week. Like that, there's such a rivalry there from last year's, you know, what could have been, should have been. And I love Hassan Reddick's quote, man. I don't know if you caught it, where he's like, a lot of boohoo over there in San Francisco saying what if, what could have been. Well, come over to Philly and get it done. So that tells them they're going to be hyped up for that game and just say, all right, you know, we want you to stop crying, stop complaining. We're going to, come to our house. We're going to show you a physical game. And, you know, I'm just worried about the 49ers being maybe a bad matchup, but I do like that the 49ers are peaking right now. And I'm so surprised, Matt, that they're actually, we're going to do our picks later, but they're the favorites. They're like -2.5 or -3 in Philly. But to me, it's like this game, I think the Eagles have circled it for the entire year whenever the calendar came out. So I think the intensity level is going to be high for this one, and I can't wait for it.
The Niners have spent the entire last 9 months whining about the fact that they're a better team. They should have won this game. And look, maybe I get it. If you're a Niners player, you're probably incredibly disappointed. You get all the way to that game, and then you have no shot. I get it. Like, I understand the feelings. But when you spend 9 months just constantly complaining about the situation, like, yeah, that other team's going to be hyped up to the hilt for this game. And by the way, so are those fans. So that is going to be an interesting spot. I'll give my pick later. I'm looking forward to seeing how Purdy plays against the secondary, because the Eagles, one thing about them this year, you can throw the ball all over them. I mean, that, they have not stopped teams from throwing the football. I'm curious in this game, can Purdy, who, as we just laid out, he didn't play really, what, he played one series in the NFC title game last year before he got knocked out with the elbow injury? Like, I'm curious what he does against the secondary. This is a secondary you can throw the ball on. So if the Niners are going to win this game, that's how they're doing it. They're going to be able to, they're going to be able to get the ball to Ayuk and to Kittle and to Debo and on and on. And on the flip side, can the Niners get a pass rush against that Eagles offensive line? Lane Johnson said he's going to be back. It's a great front. You know, now we saw the Chiefs get 5.5 sacks against Philadelphia. But they play a little differently. They bring a lot of different blitz packages. Can the Niners with that front four, with Chase Young now, can they get home? That's those on both sides of the ball. Those are the two matchups I'm looking at. I think especially the latter one to me is fascinating. Who wins that matchup? I think it's probably going to end up winning the game.
Yeah, I think for me, in terms of matchup wise, like, what if the 49ers fall behind and the Eagles are just kind of controlling the game script, the tempo, the pace, whatever it is, but just being physical, having long drives with the tush push, 4th-and-1, and Brock Purdy on the sideline cold. Debo can't get going, CMC can't get going. So, and we know the stats about Kyle Shanahan. Well, I don't remember the stat, but it's something terrible where, like, you fall behind in the fourth quarter.
Although, like, only like 36 or something.
Yeah. So I kind of want to see that play out, and I think the 49ers need that for the last kind of check mark. Okay, are you finally going to win the Super Bowl? Going to Philly, had kind of a physical, gritty game. Maybe it's raining. Like, just kind of have the worst conditions ever and come back and just have a great, memorable rally in Philadelphia. Put all the crying aside, win that game, and then you go into the playoffs feeling good. Like, right now, the 49ers are playing the best football in the NFL. This last three-game stretch here, to forget about the three-game losing streak, you know, they should be ranked number one. But it's just that like people like to say, the DNA of winning, finding a way to do it. The Eagles have that. They're so talented, and that's the scary side, like I mentioned. They have room for improvement, and they're 10-1, so they could get better. And I feel like they might get better in this game because of all the crying the last 9 months. But I kind of want to see the Eagles having their pace and say, you're here, you're in our home, try to win this way, because the 49ers, that's kind of their thing. Like, they're physical on defense. The secondary is a little thin. But that offense, to me, just feels like it's like a boxing match, you know, power against skill, and, you know, what's going to win.
Yeah. I'm fascinated. I mean, it also, I'm curious in this game, like, how big of a loss is a Funga in this game? You know, that's not going to show up when you're playing bad teams. Does it show up on Sunday? All right, real quick before we get into our bigger story, and then the five lines as well, of course. So right now, we talk playoff picture at the beginning of the show. Which team can be the conference? Who's on the outside of the playoff picture right now do you think will find their way into the playoffs?
So a team that's outside right now that will make it in. You know, I keep looking at the Broncos. Like, I kind of have, like, the soft spot for the Texans, and that's why this game is so big. We're gonna do our picks here, Broncos and the Texans. But I keep having an eye on the Broncos, man. That defense, you know, I think they had, 14 takeaways in this five-game winning streak. I forget what it is, but there was like a three-game stretch where they had 12. I'm like, that's insane there. So playing well defensively. And then, you know, I'm going to give credit to Sean Payton. Like, you know, Sean Payton, it was his fault for, you know, yapping before the season and kind of putting a bullseye on his back and pretty much going to, you know what, it's a quick fix. Nathaniel Hackett and those guys over there, they couldn't do anything. Watch me do it. And they get, you know, rocked 7-20. They're 1-5. But Sean Payton's a good coach. And I think he just kind of didn't talk so much. It's like, okay, All right, let's have a process here. It's our first year. We're going to get it done. We're going to figure out this roster from the previous regime. These players, do we like them? Do we don't? And they've kind of gotten past that point. Okay, let's see what we do our way. And credit to Sean Payton, you know, being patient with Vance Joseph and such in this era where people are so impatient and just fire everybody. He could easily fire Vance Joseph after September. It was that bad. And they're one of the best defensive units in the NFL. And Sean Payton is doing and built an offense. It's kind of like, all right, Russell, you're not the same dude, but just play safe, protect the ball. Just give it to your running backs. Throw it to Cortland Sutton whenever we need a ball to be thrown for third and one or red zone target. And it's working. So, you know, I want to see this defense against C.J. Stroud. And you know, I think that I'll be the way my pick will kind of turn out. I don't want to take the easy route, so I'll go with the Broncos. But those two teams are on my radar.
Well, it works out. It's funny. I'm actually going to go with Houston. So okay. I think Houston's going to get to 11 wins. I think Houston's going to – their schedule's a joke. I mean, if they beat Denver, their schedule's just really easy down the stretch. Now, I will say, Houston's a young team, and Houston is the reason Carolina's not winless, okay? And they lost to Atlanta. Like, they can lose some games they shouldn't. But I am taking – my feeling on this, give me the best quarterback that's not in the playoffs right now. And for me, Stroud is that guy. And you could argue Stafford, that's fine. And maybe we're both dumb for not taking an NFC team because the NFC is such a wreck. But I'll go Stroud and the Texans. I think they'll find their way in. So that Houston game with Denver, as you say, huge game. Major importance. Real quick, actually, before we get to the five best games, bigger story. Look, we got to bring it up, even though the Panthers are 1-10 right now. Frank Reich fired after 11 games. I mean, that's unheard of. Nathaniel Hackett got more games than that. Urban Meyer got more games than that. Frank Reich, universally respected in the NFL. One of the good guys by every account. And yet he's gone after 11 games. 1-10. David Tepper moving on. Couldn't even pronounce his name right in the press conference. Kept saying it wrong. What is the bigger story moving forward for the Panthers? Is it the struggles of Bryce Young, who has 9 touchdowns, 8 picks this year, including a bunch of pick sixes? Or is it David Tepper's inability to stay out of the football side of operations?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to go with Bryce Young. Let's just hope David Tepper figures out, oh, crap, I told people to pick Bryce Young, or I didn't say, I kind of just initiated, or just kind of hinted, hey, keep going with that guy over there instead of C.J. Stroud. So maybe he feels like, all right, I effed up here, but we got to go work on the pick that I made. So, you know, I'm going to go with Bryce Young. He like, I'm going to be honest, he looks terrible. He looks bad. He doesn't look like he belongs out there. And, you know, the size, you know, every time I watch him play, I'm like, hey, he's small out there. And you gotta build a better roster to help him out. You can't be a creator away from the pocket. That was one of the skills of Alabama. If you don't have a good offensive line, if you don't have any weapons either. And, you know, I'm so mad at myself for thinking this team's going to be decent in the offseason. I'm like, Miles Sanders? Eh, not bad. Thielen, Mingo, okay. And I'm like, what was I thinking of giving this offense a chance? And the other part of it too, man, it's like, you know, Tepper building this all-star coaching staff. I'm like, okay, they could probably do something here with Frank, right? And I should have known when the second that they missed out on Ben Johnson and Frank Reich was prize number two and Tepper was meddling with the coaching staff, that's probably not a good recipe to building a good culture there. So, but they're stuck with Bryce Young. You don't have a first-round pick because you gave it away to the Bears. You don't have a number one wide receiver because you gave them to the Bears with DJ Moore. So, and you thought this offensive line, bringing them back, was the answer. It wasn't. So you got to rebuild the offensive line, get weapons, get a good running back, and help out your quarterback. So I think until they do that and get the right personnel, I don't want to write off Bryce Young. Again, in this era, people are very impatient. It's not looking good. I'm not going to deny that. But you got to go and somehow give Bryce Young a fighting chance. He was your number one pick that you gave up a whole boatload of picks and DJ Moore for, so make it work.
So, yeah, look, you could go either way here. I'll take the Tepper angle just because you want Bryce Young. Like, look, I have been a fan of teams that have bad ownership. And you're just screwed. Like, there is no way around it, okay? I am a Knicks fan. I have gone through my entire life of James Dolan just getting in the way. And finally, it appears that he's so tired of being in the way that he's finally just sat down. And oh, look at that. The Knicks are probably going to win 50 games this year. Like, it is the worst thing that can happen to your franchise, okay? I, for years and years and years, my entire life, I was an Oakland A's fan in baseball. Like, they've literally gotten me to the point I don't even watch baseball anymore. Like, I hate the owner so much. Excuse me, John Fisher. I cannot stand him with such a passion that I will not root for them. And I've gotten to know some people in the Brewers organization. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Them. Never thought it was possible. I was never somebody who could ever change teams. The ownership actually forced me to do it. I worry that Tepper is one of these owners who just can't get out of his own way. He just cannot, like, look, man, I don't care where you made your billions. I don't care. You didn't make them in the NFL. You don't know what you don't know, and that's a problem. Like, in the NFL, guys come in from all walks of life, from all types of businesses where they've made their fortunes, and, of course, wherever they were extremely successful. The problem with that becomes a lot of these guys then think, well, then I'll be successful doing this. I know what I'm doing. The NFL is a different beast. And, excuse me. And with that, some guys learn, okay, I got to be more hands-off here and I got to hire people to do the job and get out of their way. And some people never learn that. I mean, Jerry Jones has been Jerry Jones' entire tenure as the owner of the Cowboys. The only thing that saved him early was Jimmy Johnson. The second Jimmy Johnson got run off, how's that been going? I mean, you know, look, you look at Daniel Snyder in Washington. It's a train wreck forever. The best owners in the NFL are the ones who hire football people and get out of the way. And so far, Tepper has not been able to do that. We'll see. Maybe he'll learn. Maybe he'll grow. He's a young owner. But my concern is that Tepper's just going to be one of these guys who's constantly involved. The good news is for the Panthers, I think he's willing to spend the money. I think he wants to win. But none of that matters if he's the one constantly making the football decisions. And that is where right now from Carolina I'm concerned.
Yeah, if you don't get a wake-up call and look yourself in the mirror after this, the way it turned out with the number one pick and in this whole hiring process with Frank Wright, and then also meddling and saying, hey, pick these guys, this all-star team, then he's probably going to learn for a long time, Matt. And you're probably right there. Like, that's kind of a scary sight to know that this guy could be around for 10, 20 years and still be meddling and just kind of say, you know what, do that. And that could be a whole issue. And, you know, and real quick credit to Albert Breer and Connor Orr for, I checked that Monday show. And, you know, one thing that I forgot about, like, the Panthers can't figure out if they want to start winning now or rebuilding. Like, they trade CMC, they keep Brian Burns. Like, they trade DJ Moore, you know, and they go spend money in the offseason for Bryce Young. Like, figure out a route first, a path, and stay committed and see what happens.
Oh, great points by those guys. Very true. All right. Let's get into the Week 13 lines. As always, got a five-pack of them. We are going to start with Thursday night's game. Seattle, coming off of a couple of losses now, at Dallas. Dallas is 8-3, trying to stay near Philadelphia, trying to make that rematch at home matter with the Eagles. The Cowboys are laying 9.5, a huge line. And they have been great at home this year. They have destroyed teams. They've also played the Commanders and the Giants and the Jets and the Pats at home. So the Seahawks, a little bit of a step up in class, but the Seahawks struggling nonetheless. Do you like Dallas here? And if you do, do you like him by the full 9.5?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that last part, because for some reason, I keep believing the Seahawks are going to make games close. I gave them the 7 points against the 49ers. I gave them the 7 points against the Ravens. They kept getting beat down, and I think I'm going to give them the 8.5 points, and Dallas wins a lot at home. And I don't know why I keep believing in Seattle, but obviously the pick is the Cowboys. I'm not going to go away from that. It's going to be the Cowboys. But 8.5 is a lot of points, and they're just too talented. And I just don't learn my lesson with the Seahawks team. And Matt, maybe we jinxed ourselves when you brought up the other day, hey, we actually picked the Seahawks to be in the Super Bowl in one of our previews way back in April, and they've been terrible ever since. So, you know, I'll just say this real quick. I know we didn't get a chance to talk about the NFC when it came to, you know, teams making the playoffs, but if the Seahawks go 0-4, which they're 1-0 already because the 49ers, they lose to the Cowboys, lose to the 49ers, lose to the Eagles again, I don't want to see you in the playoffs. You don't belong in the playoffs. You can't compete with these top dogs. Let at least maybe the Rams or the Packers get a sniff here, because at least the Packers recently beat the Lions, and you know the Rams beat the Seahawks twice. I don't want to see you in the playoffs. So unless if you go 0-4 here in this stretch here, you don't belong in it. So show me some fight, and I'm gonna take the 8.5 points on the Seahawks for my last kind of like all right, don't fool me anymore. One more try here, but I'm taking the Cowboys.
Okay. I'm taking the Cowboys and I'm swallowing the points because I have been like you. I have picked Seattle to cover, I feel like, every game. And I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of watching Seattle. I'm like, hey, man, I wrote, like, we do our best picks of the week every week with Craig Ellenport. And I remember writing very strongly when I'm like, why are the Seahawks big dogs against Baltimore? This is stupid. And then they beat by like 40 points. And I was like, all right. You know, listen, I guess we're all bound to have those days, but that hurts. And then I picked them to cover against San Francisco, and that game was a killing. So I'm not going to go that route. I like Dallas in this game. I think Dallas is playing great football. Dak is playing excellent football, some of the best of his career the last couple of months. I always worry about Dallas when they play really good teams. But I think Seattle at this point is a decent team. So I think they will handle business. I think they will win at home. It's a short week, but it's not really because both of them played last Thursday. So, you know, it really is a full week of practice for both sides. Of course, Dallas getting the comfy confines. I like the Cowboys in this game, something like 30-20. I think it's right around the number, but if I have to go one way or the other on the number, I will take Dallas, who has been blowing teams out, so give them credit. All right, on the AFC side, as we mentioned earlier a couple times, really important game. In Houston, haven't been able to say that in a long time, but this year the Texans are much better. They are 6-5. Denver is 6-5 on a 5-game winning streak. Denver is weird in the sense that you watch these games, and you're never like, yeah, Denver looks great, but they just keep finding a way to win and give them credit. Some of those wins have come against really good football teams. Shout out to the Bills who can't count. And the Texans laying 3.5 at home in what is not only a big game just for record, but for tiebreaker as well here. Huge game. Do you like Denver or Houston in Energy Stadium?
It's a tough one. And I know earlier in the show, I picked the Broncos, or I guess the team, to probably make it in the playoffs. And it won't make sense because I'm going with the Texans here. And I just realized that because I also did it on our MMQB pick'ems. And I hate to change. And like, when people ask me to make picks, I just keep them all the same. I hate to lose track and what did I choose here. So it doesn't make sense. I picked the Broncos earlier, but I'm going to go with the Texans to win this game here. And, you know, they're at home. I go with the Broncos. I think the Broncos could cover that 3.5 there. You know, it should be a close game. Could be one of these one-point games or one of these close games that, as time expires, a field goal kind of thing. So, you know, I do like the Broncos defense, you know, but if C.J. Stroud kind of gets on a hot stretch there with Tank Dell or Nico Collins and scores a couple of touchdowns, do we trust Russell Wilson and kind of, you know, get a couple of scores going from playing from behind? Like, they benefited from short fields from all these takeaways too. So, you know, I gave Sean Payton his credit earlier and Russell Wilson, but if Stroud gets back on a heater, and it's kind of a little, he was a little quiet for his standards, which says a lot for a rookie last week against the Jaguars. Like, he had a couple of big plays to Tank Dell, and he kind of was a little quiet in the fourth quarter. But he set it up for that field goal and they missed it. But, you know, I think CJ Stroud being at home and just being able to put up points, that's why I lean with the Texans, but I expect a close game.
Yeah, so I'm going to take the Texans. I'll swallow the 3.5 points. Look, I think Denver deserves all the credit in the world for 1-5 straight here. They could have folded the tent. They could have sold off half the team. They didn't do that. And they've won 5 straight. Kudos to them. The problem I have is a lot of these games have been like, hey, we've gotten 8 turnovers from the other team. I mean, the Bills and the Chiefs basically were like, here's the game, beat us. And both those games came down to it. I mean, even though the Chiefs lost 24-9, that game was 14-9 with 5 minutes left, and the Chiefs fumbled a punt return, so they're on 5-yard line. That was the game. And then we all saw the Bills game, which is one of the most ridiculous football games of the year. I feel like Denver deserves credit, and yet at the same point, it also deserves a little bit of like closer analysis. Minnesota did the same thing. Minnesota turned the ball over a million times and yet barely lost. And then last week, it's like Dorian Thompson-Robinson at quarterback. I don't know. I feel like if Houston doesn't turn the ball over 3 or 4 times, we'll wait in this game. So I will take Houston. Look, Denver, by the way, is a huge stretch for them. 5 in a row, but now a 3-game road swing. Texans, Chargers, Lions. You got to win 2 of them. You got to win 2 of them. If you're going to make the playoffs, you got to win 2 of these games. They can beat the Chargers. Hell, everybody can beat the Chargers. But, like, can you win one of those 2 others, and can you handle business against L.A.? That's a question for me. I like the Texans in this game. I do think it's interesting. I think it's something like 30-23, 27-20, somewhere in that range. Give me Houston. All right, NFC side here. Going to the Lions at the Saints. Now, this is an interesting game. The Lions in the Superdome, favored by 4.5. Saints coming off a bad loss to Atlanta that drops them out of first place in NFC South. We know with the Saints, they're inconsistent. Some weeks you get a team that looks like they're pretty good, and other weeks you get them, and you're like, how did this team win a game this year? They've been all over the place. Derek Carr has mirrored that with his play. The defense was very, very good early in the year. Last month or so, it's been more inconsistent. The Lions, 8-2, looked amazing. They lost on Thanksgiving to the Packers. They were handled. They were lucky the week prior to beat the Bears. They barely won that game. They needed a double-digit comeback late. Do you like the Lions or the Saints to get right here?
Yeah, I'll be quick to the point here. Definitely, I like the Lions here. But it was kind of funny seeing the Detroit celebrate 8-2. Like, oh, we've never been here before. And it kind of bit them against the Packers. Like act like you belong a little bit. And maybe you win some of these games you're supposed to win. So I am worried about Detroit, especially the defense. The defense has been terrible. But the Saints have been, I feel like, a little maybe the same as bad defensively. And the only thing the Saints have been that they had consistently for most of the season was the defense. And they just fell off in the last month. Like, this is a terrible defense. And, like, you know what's bad, man? When you help Arthur Smith and his offensive scheme get on track on you, because they can't do anything with Desmond Ridder. They don't even know how to use Bijan Robinson. Suddenly they go up for 200 rushing yards on the Saints. So you have to face David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. So that's a whole recipe of problems there. And if you're running the football, maybe that's good news for Jared Goff. They got to protect them better too. But I see the Lions bouncing back here, scoring a bunch of points, because I hadn't even got to Derek Carr yet, man. Like it's got to get to a point where, like, the Saints are probably thinking, we probably screwed up giving Derek Carr that extra money. And I'm like, it could be one and done. Now look at the contract, $30 million guaranteed next year. You're kind of stuck with the guy. But, yeah, it's been pretty bad for the Saints.
Yeah, I like the Lions too, for all the reasons you said. I'll echo that. I think the Lions win. I can see the Saints maybe even covering it, like a backdoor cover or something, you know, 24 and, you know, 21 or something like that. But I like the Lions to win. The Superdome's a hard place to play. But yeah, give me Detroit. And look, Detroit, you know, they love playing indoors. They love those domes. Well, they're going to get another dome here. Not their dome, but another one. By the way, as we're doing this, Brian Callahan of the Boston Herald is reporting. He's at practice right now in New England. And Malik Cunningham and Bailey Zappi are the only quarterbacks throwing passes. Mac Jones is just standing there watching. So, good times in Foxborough. How things have changed in the last couple of years. Okay. Big game of the day on Sunday, big game of the week, maybe biggest game of the year. At the Link, the 49ers laying 2.5 points at Philadelphia. Eagles 10-1, Niners 8-3. Of course, they've been on winning streaks twice this year with a three-game losing streak in between. Do you like the Niners to go on the road and make it really interesting for the one seed, or do you like Philly to put their stamp on the Niners and send them back to the West Coast?
Taking the money line, give me the Eagles. They're at home, so, but something feels a little off, a little fishy with that. But I will take the Eagles. And like I mentioned, the 49ers are playing their best football, but I just don't like the whole crying for the last 9 months. It's kind of like get over your ex kind of thing. And, like, that's always, you know, bad recipe. Like, you're going to go meet that person, and it's like, oh, okay, you're going to, like, just kind of fumble your words and be terrible, and it's going to go wrong. So I'm not expecting them to have a poor performance. It could be like a Bills, you know, Eagles kind of game. Like, you know, they are at their best right now. They're healthy. But that's the thing that I don't really like about the 49ers. It has to be right. Like, you have to have the healthy roster. You have to have Trent Williams and Deebo Samuel to make Brock Purdy work. And you need to get Chase Young. And it's like, you got a lot of talent. You can make it work. You should be able to be diverse and kind of play different styles. And the Eagles know how to do that. And they're at home. And I always like to look for teams that are due for a letdown or a trap game, but they just find ways to win. And maybe this is a week to do it, but like I mentioned, like when Hassan Reddick is saying, come to our house and stop crying, that tells me they're going to be ready and hyped for this game.
I'm taking the Eagles. And I get it with the Niners. Player for player, they're probably even more talented. That game's in Philadelphia. I grew up on the East Coast. Those people are nuts. That place is going to be going insane. That team knows how to win. They just do. And you know what? All the analytics stuff in the world, all this EPA, and this guy's this, and this guy gets that separation, none of that shows, hey, the Eagles are one of those teams that they just make winning plays at winning times. They just do it. They know how to make a big play when they need it, get a big stop when they need it. They're phenomenal. I mean, Hurts in the last 2 years as a starter has lost, what, two football games? Just two games as a starter. Two in the last two seasons. Okay? I mean, he is 24-2 in the last 2 years. And the only games they've lost were to Washington and the Jets. Two games. You want to talk about a letdown game? There you have it. Like, I don't think they're losing this game. And I'll tell you the biggest reason I don't think they're going to lose this game is I think the Eagles are going to be able to block the 49ers. And I think that's going to lead to Hurts having a big day. Because I don't think Philly can cover them. Or excuse me, I don't think the Niners can cover Philly. I don't. And by the way, I think the Niners are going to score some points. I think they'll throw the ball some too in this game. I don't think the Niners can shut down A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. I like Tre'Davious Ward. The rest of that secondary, I got a lot of questions. And if you're the Eagles, you can make sure that you get some mismatches in that thing. I just, Goddard not being there hurts. I still like Philly. I still think they're the better team. I think they find the way to win. I think it's a fairly high scoring game. I think it's like 31-28, something like that. I think it's a great game. Give me the Eagles. And then lastly, Sunday night game in Green Bay. All of a sudden, the Packers a little frisky here. They were 3-6. Now they're 5-6. Jordan Love's played well over the last couple of weeks. They play the Chiefs, who are 8-3 coming in off a win off against the Raiders. Well, that game started in a way that it was not great for the Chiefs. They're up 14-0. They ended up outscoring them 31-3 the rest of the way. Put together their best offensive performance of the year in the second half. They had 17 points. Do you like the Chiefs, who are 6.5-point favorites, I might add, at Lambeau? Do you like them to go up there and win that game and or to cover? Or do you think the Packers pull the upset at home and get themselves to 6-6?
No, I think the Chiefs will win and cover. And, Matt, I'm kind of glad we didn't talk a week ago because I was ready to write off this Chiefs team a week ago when they lost to the Eagles and they dropped 30,000 passes and they looked horrendous on offense. They couldn't score in the second half. And then they do well against the Raiders. I know they were down 14-0 and they came back. But, you know, what this team really needs, I know they might not be, you know, this, you know, high gear explosive offense. They might not find that stride again, or at least this season. But if you get Rashee Rice to contribute the way he did last week and Isaiah Pacheco to run the way he does, and, you know, I love watching the guy run and I like seeing all the memes and the gifs about the way he runs. You know, he's feisty, he's physical. But he gets it done, you know? So if you get those two guys contributing, you're a balanced attack that helps out Kelsey, that helps out Mahomes, you have a great offensive line, and you have a great defense. Like when it's a bad day at the offense for the Chiefs against the Raiders because they allowed, you know, 14 points early, and they ended up with 17, that tells you your defense is on point. Like, that's kind of just, they have high standards there. So it's a good team, but I was ready to kind of say, yeah, they're going to go far in the AFC. And then I see the Ravens with, you know, a terrible passing attack on Sunday Night Football against the Chargers. So it's kind of set up for them again, Matt.
Yeah, look, I think the Chiefs will win the game. It's cold in Green Bay this time of year, but it's cold in Kansas City this time of year, too. It's actually not going to be that bad. It's going to be like in the low 30s, which if you're in Green Bay in December, you probably sign up for. I think the Chiefs probably win this game something like 27-17, you know? I mean, the problem for the Packers is I just don't know, are they going to score? I mean, that's going to be the thing. I mean, Kansas City's defense this year has been lights out. They've been great. Every game. Literally every game. They have not had one bad game this year. They've had bad moments, like the Raiders scoring 14 in the first quarter, but then the Raiders scored 3 points the rest of the game. I think Jordan Love has a lot of potential. The problem for Jordan Love in this game is, like, who's he throwing to? I mean, you know, Jaden Reed has been a nice young rookie for him, but they don't have a Devontae Adams they can rely on. They don't have that receiver that they go, okay, on 3rd and 8, that's where we're going. We feel good about it. I think Kansas City will pull away as the game goes on. I like them to win. I also like them to cover. So we're in a lot of the same boats this week. That's okay. All right. What do you have as we're wrapping here? What do you have going on? What do you have happening here this week or so?
Yeah, it's actually been pretty chill and quiet for me, which is good. But, you know, we haven't spoken in a minute, so I'll give you like a little update about the Oklahoma trip and going having the wedding. That was interesting, man. I did enjoy myself, but it kind of really told you how small town vibe it was, because the first night we got there, it's like we don't have a car, and it's about to be like 6 or 7 p.m. They're like, you should probably get food now, because everything will be closed by 8. There's no DoorDash, there's no delivery. Like, maybe you get pizza coming your way, that's about it. But don't make sure you get on the Wi-Fi, because there's not much signal out here. So it kind of felt like we're in the middle of nowhere. small town. It's kind of like you drive for a minute and it's kind of, you see the city. Oh, now you left it kind of thing. So, and then we went to like a ice cream parlor. When you walk in, I felt like I was back in 1953 and I'm like, I feel like I don't belong here, but people were so nice to me. So that was great. So, yeah, definitely small town vibe. And it was a good experience. I'm glad I went there. I got to be in Oklahoma, but out being in the middle of nowhere was quite an experience.
Oklahoma, that might be the, like when you drive into a state, they have the sign, you know, it should be like Oklahoma, the middle of nowhere. Every time I drive through Iowa to get to Kansas City, which I did last week when I went to the Eagles game, the sign says, "Welcome to Iowa, fields of opportunities." And every time I see that sign, I want to drive my car right into a river because it is nothing but a godforsaken field for like 4.5 straight hours. I mean, I'll make a few phone calls while I'm in Iowa because I got to do something and, you know, throw it on the car speaker. And I always think to myself when I'm going through there, and God knows this applies to Oklahoma, like, whatever it was, 150 years ago, somewhere like that, like the Oregon Trail, you know, people going west, you know, you can drive now like 90 miles an hour if you want to through those states. Can you imagine a wagon train through those states? Like, how did anybody do that without getting in there for about 20, 21 days and being like, you know what, I'm good, I'm done with this. I'll turn around and go back to my crap life. Because anything beats sitting here and looking at a field. Like, I would have been like, are we lost? Did we just do a circle? I mean, what landmark is there? Oh, there's the one tree in the state. There it is. Let's head for that. I don't know, man. I grew up in a rural area, even though people here in New York and they think immediately like, oh, the city. I grew up an hour and a half outside the city. I graduated with 43 kids. I mean, you're talking, I grew up in a small town in the mountains. So I don't even I got nothing against remote areas, but I at least grew up in an area where, like, when the leaves changed, it was picturesque, and like people came from all over the country to shoot photography. You go to Iowa. I've never been to Oklahoma. I'm imagining it's similar. You're like, what am I looking at? Like, this is the windmill in a field. And like, there it is. But I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad it worked out for you.
They do have Route 66. Now you remind me with the Oregon Trail there, but it's like, it's cool, and it's like, it's just kind of like a gas station with something that kind of pops out, like a gorilla in front of it or something. But that's about it. But it was a cool experience.
I watched a show probably about 6 months ago on Vice News where they did like a whole thing about, like, it's, they have like a series called Abandoned, and they talk about Route 66, how like there's huge stretches of it that have just been completely like abandoned.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. But maybe in Oklahoma, they're still keeping the magic alive.
Oh, yeah. It's alive. It's like their tourist attraction thing. Everywhere you go, you're welcome to Route 66. I'm like, okay, I get it now. It's the 20th time you reminded me here.
It ends. The Route 66 ends in Chicago, downtown Chicago.
Oh, really? So it goes to Chicago and then through, I think it goes to California,
yeah, it
right?
goes down. Right. Yeah, it goes down and up through. Yeah, it ends on the pier. It's in with Santa Monica or something like that.
Yeah.
And there you go. People came from football and they got the Route 66 life lesson.
There you go.
Yeah, man. I mean, for me, not a ton, you know. Worked Thanksgiving, which was cool. Went to the in-laws. That was nice. It was fine. Got some good food. Actually, I'll tell you what. So my wife is an amazing cook. She's a great baker. But a lot of times she bakes like over my head. She makes stuff that like it's so intricate. And I'm like, I just want a cookie. Like, that's all I want. Like, I don't want like a trifle. I got to be careful. Just give me, for the love of God, just give me a chocolate chip cookie. So I knew this was coming. And on Thanksgiving, I'm like, I'm going to bake cookies myself because I am not afraid to bake. And I just want a cookie for Thanksgiving. Well, what ended up happening was I baked like 18 cookies, but I ended up with a ton of cookie dough left over. And I love cookie dough with a passion. It is my favorite. Like, I'm just going to sit here and be fat food in the world. So I had a lot of it. And I was like, I gave some to like my daughter. She's like, oh, can I? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I just sat there and I was like, kind of like eating it mindlessly while I was watching television. And I was like, oh, it's a couple spoonfuls. It's fine, whatever. Dude, I ended up eating like all of it to the point that I barely ate on Thanksgiving. I was like, I'm going to die if I eat anything else. So I was apparently thankful for cookie dough. Although I did knock down some actual cookies as well, so that was positive. That was, I think all day I ate like with probably is the equivalent of like a dozen cookies and like a half slice of turkey. So That was what I did. I will say, though, like, I got nothing against Thanksgiving, but Christmas is my favorite holiday. I just love, because Christmas is like a whole season. You know, it's not just the 25th of December. Like, everybody puts up the lights. And I know in California, you guys aren't getting a hint of snow. We already have snow. So it's oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It this morning, 11 degrees. So that I could do without. But I went out on Black Friday, got everybody a gift. Like, I'm covered. I'm good. Got my wife a couple things. Like, I normally will be the first one to tell you I'm a selfish jerk and I get myself stuff on Black Friday. I got myself nothing except for a couple of dress shirts. I figured when we go to the Super Bowl, we're going to need a couple of dress shirts. So I did that. Yeah. But outside of that, that was it. But man, I love the time of year. I went out and bought 2 6-foot inflatables for the yard. I'm pumped. My wife is not pumped, but whatever. She'll live. Just got new gutters on the house, so I'm going to have to click on some lights on the gutters. Got the tree, got the Christmas village, I got the mantle taken care of. I'm set, man. I love this time of year, so I'm happy about the Christmas time.
We are definitely opposite when it comes to the gifts. I wait to the last minute. I hate everything about Black Friday. It's like, there's no deals here. Why waste my time? I know it's not those days anymore where you go into the midnight at Walmart and fight for a TV. You got to punch somebody to get it. But I don't know. I just kind of like to chill. It's like one of those times where you just chill. And then I got to actually go to the store. And then I kick myself for being at a Target on December 23rd and the lines are just going out the door. So I guess kudos to you for that.
You know what, man? I started doing it. I used to be like that. And then I started doing it in college because my girlfriend, I'm like, I got to get her a gift. Like, I have no money. I'm broke. So I was like, I have to go. And my buddy was in the same boat. We would go out the Black Friday. And like his whole family, like, well, his brothers started coming with his sister. And then it just kind of mushroomed as the years went on. And like other friends of ours were like, man, I'm broke too. Like, let's all go like be broke together and go to the mall. And it just started. I'll tell you a funny story on the way out of here. So I was, 22, 23 years old. And we went Black Friday shopping. And it started at midnight. And there's a where I grew up, there's a strip mall. Actually, it's not a strip mall. It's like an outlet, commons. And it's famous, like to the point that when the Pope came to the United States back then, like he actually went there. They shut the whole place down so he could shop there. And they have all the big time retailers, like the Gucci's of the world and all that stuff. I was not shopping at Gucci, okay? I was shopping at like Old Navy. But we used to go there and they would bus people up from New York City. They have short line buses and these people get off the buses. Man, I swear to you, they'd be in front of you and they would Amex like $15,000, right? And I'd go up there with like a t-shirt. So in any event, so one year we do this whole thing and we finished, I didn't think we were finished. We were like taking a break at like 5 o'clock in the morning and we're starving and it's 5 a.m. Like there's nowhere to go. So we're like, all right, where can we eat? And we're looking it up. It's like the only place open is Denny's. I'm like, oh, all right, we're going to Denny's. So we go to Denny's and my buddy and I are sitting in a booth and the next booth over behind him are these two girls, women, our age, probably like 20, 21. And this one girl, I can't use the language she was quite using, but she was very suspicious that her boyfriend was cheating on her. And she was basically saying, if he's cheating on me, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to him, right? And they're going again. It's loud, right? So we're like kind of listening, laughing. And the other girl just goes, you know what? Fine. I'm done with this. I'm the girl. I'm the one he's cheating on you with. And
wow,
a full-scale fist fight broke out. Like, they're wrestling on the ground, like, food's everywhere, right? Like, and the waiter comes over, and this poor kid is, like, 18 years old. And he just walks up to our table, and he's like, listen, it's free. Don't even worry about it. And I was like, dude, I'll pay you. I don't care. This is great. Like, we were about ready to fall asleep, and these two idiots are rolling around trying to rip each other's earrings out over some guy who's probably cheating on both of them. And it was, dude, I'm telling you, it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. There were eggs all over the place. Eggs, whatever they were drinking, Coke, whatever. Like, man, and I hate to say it, but they were the kind of people you expected to be at a Denny's at 5 o'clock in the morning. Like, I'm guessing it had nothing to do with Black Friday. It was spectacular. And we got free breakfast out of it. So it all worked out. But yeah, that's a reason why not to go out on a Black Friday. These days, I'm done by midnight. I'm done. So it's just, I'm in, I'm home, I'm not eating the Denny's.
The pressure on that girl to just be like, all right, it's me. I can't take it anymore, man.
It was the best because, like I said, my buddy had his back to them and he's listening to this whole thing. Like, and now he's a police officer. Now he got his training there. And it was so funny because you're just listening to this whole thing. And the girl's just like, I don't care anymore. Fine, it's me. And I'm looking at him and his face when she said that. He just immediately turned around. Like, he's like, we're not even hiding this anymore. Now we're fully invested. And she called that girl a whole bunch of names, man. She like went over the table at her and they fell out. What is happening? Like, and it was great. And that poor way, I'll never forget his face. Just, yeah, man, whatever. It's free.
I kind of hope you see that guy one day.
Nowadays, it's like, what could that bill have been? $15? But like it was, you know, I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. Thanks, man. I'll take it. That's one more gift I don't have to buy. You know, $15. It saves me some money.
Hopefully one day you run into that guy and ask, hey, whatever happened with those two girls? And like, I actually married the one I was cheating with. Yeah.
I'm thinking prison. And I'm thinking that, I'm thinking that neither one of them ended up with that guy. But dude, I'm telling you, I hate to say it, but it was a kind of interaction that you were like, yeah, I'm not surprised this is happening. It's just kind of like, yeah, it figures. Like, of course that these two are going to fight at a Denny's at 5 a.m. You know, just the way they had talked throughout the entire conversation. Let's put it this way. When the girl admitted to being the one that was involved in this tryst, you knew it was about to be a fish fight. Like, there was no question. That's why my friend just immediately turned around. Because you're like, oh, this is going to be a full-scale fish fight right here and now. There was no way they were going to talk through it, okay? It was just going to be who can rip whose hoop earring out first, right? Or, like, who can rip out somebody's hair? Like, that's what was going to happen. And I'll say this. It didn't disappoint. It was a good fight. It was a good – there was a lot of name-calling and screaming and punching. It was – I'm assuming the cops got called. We didn't stick around that long because luckily when it started, we already had the bill. We're like, all right, then, have a nice night. Oh, good. Good old Denny's in Middletown, New York, baby. Shout out. Fantastic.
Good show and free food. I love it.
Free dinner and a show. It was beautiful. So, all right, with that, gave you a little Denny's, a little Route 66, and some football. So, hopefully you stuck around for the whole thing. If you did, we really appreciate all of you, as always. And as I always say, if you want to leave a question for us to answer, leave a comment in the iTunes, and we will read the review, and we'll read the question. Thank you so much for listening, being part of our week. Glad to be a part of yours. For Gilberto Manzano, I am Matt Verderham. Enjoy week 13 of the NFL season. We'll be back next week.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.